Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everybody. This is Danny Nesvetarani, your community journalist for CJSF, as well as host of the Tuesday Speak Up. Thank you all so much for tuning in this lovely, sunny, warm Tuesday morning. And today, we have a good mix of talk content, as well as a little bit of music on the way. You know, one thing I feel like I've noticed about the summer is that it feels like, in terms of news and getting coverage of things, it's a little slower. But at the same time, there are still things going on all the time, and still things worth reporting on, and still things that need to be spoke up about and shared to all of you. So stay tuned for all of that this hour. I want to acknowledge that this show is being broadcasted on the unceded and ancestral territories of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here since time immemorial, sharing, creating, and existing before a time before any of us can remember. So I just want to acknowledge that. And to start off today's episode, I'm going to be playing a song from someone who's been topping the charts lately here at CJSF, and I thought I would keep that going because, you know, when someone tops the charts here at CJSF, it is for good reason. So coming up next, we have a track from Jan off of her album Wish I Could've. This track is called Help Myself.
Helping them help.
helping myself, cause if I don't like me, why would anyone else? I wake up in the morning to meditate. I say every affirmation written on my page, yeah. Keep on helping, I'm helping myself, cause if I don't love me, of myself. Keep on helping, I'm helping myself, cause if I don't like me, why would anyone else? I wake up in the morning to meditate. I say every affirmation written on my page, yeah. Keep on helping, I'm helping myself, cause if I don't love me, why would anyone else? I look into the mirror and say
And we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in. That was Jan with the track Help Myself. Hope you all enjoyed. And the next thing on the menu for this hour of Speak Up is an interview I did with the head of transportation for the city of New Westminster on a recent decent sum of money that they received from TransLink for active transportation projects within the city, about $3.96 million, I believe. And, you know, anytime a city receives a amount of money such as that for a very specific thing, I always kind of, at least me personally, I'm always curious as to what that is actually going to go towards. So I thought I reached out. I thought I would reach out. And thankfully, you know, due to the career I've chosen, it was actually quite relevant to what I do. So I was able to speak with the head of the transportation department for the city of New Westminster and sort of pick his brain on what specific projects this $3 million would go towards. And, you know, I learned quite a bit. He definitely went into detail on that. But I also got to ask him how cities, specifically New Westminster in this case, sort of reconciles the need for active transportation improvements when it comes to walkability and cycling and buses, while also contending with the fact that over 50% of people are still relying mostly on single personal vehicles. And his response was really interesting. So here is that interview for all of you. This is Danny Nezverani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On July 17th, the city of New Westminster received $3.96 million in funding from Metro Vancouver's transportation agency, TransLink, to fund transportation improvement projects throughout the city. According to the city's communications team, the improvements that this funding will go towards are aligned with New Westminster's master transportation plan, as well as several of the city's goals regarding climate action. This includes increasing the number of trips taken through sustainable modes of transportation and reallocating road space to sustainable transportation and public spaces. To learn more about the specifics of what this transportation funding will be going towards, CJSF reached out to Mike Anderson, the manager of transportation for New Westminster. During our conversation, Anderson listed the various streams of funding that will be contributing to the city's transportation infrastructure, starting with buses.
It's a combination, really. So as I mentioned before, TransLink has different streams of funding. So there is a program for bus speed and reliability infrastructure. So any improvements we make that can help buses get through the city more reliably and in some cases faster. So we've completed a study a few years ago about transit in the city and where buses in particular get caught up in congestion. And so we look at ways that we can reduce delay for transit.
Anderson then went on to detail another area that this funding will be going towards: research on how to alleviate bus delays in certain busier areas of New Westminster.
We're also working on studies at both ends of the Queensborough Bridge. And although the Queensborough Bridge is provincial infrastructure and jurisdiction, we are working with TransLink and the Ministry of Transportation to see what we can do to improve bus movements on and off the bridges, because especially getting on the bridge, buses experience a lot of delays. So the TransLink funding is helping that, so fund those studies.
Next, he touched on funding towards walking and cycling infrastructure.
Another stream of funding is for walking infrastructure, especially where we can improve walking infrastructure to transit. And so TransLink funds projects that improve walking infrastructure that connects in particular to the more frequent transit network. And then the other stream of funding is for cycling projects. And so we have an active transportation network plan to build out 26 cycling routes across the city quite ambitiously in the next 5 years. And so TransLink funds cycling network improvements as well. So
by the end of our conversation, it became clear that this funding would be going towards improvements for public transit, cycling infrastructure, and overall walkability in New Westminster. We asked Anderson if there were any concerns from those that rely on personal vehicles that still needed to be considered in the city's transportation plan. This was his response.
That's a good question. New Westminster's transportation policy definitely prioritizes walking, cycling, and transit. It's clearly outlined in our transportation plan as our priority modes of transportation. Recognizing that still about somewhat over 50% of people in New Westminster use a car to get around. So we tend not to do things that, a lot of things that reduce capacity for cars. We are focused on making improvements for those people on foot and bike, particularly safety improvements, as you noted. We can't build our way out of traffic congestion, unfortunately. Nobody's been able to do that. And so while we can make things somewhat more efficient, the reality is that, we can't accommodate more cars on our roads than are really already there today without significant impacts and significant costs. The cost to, for example, widen a road is it's extremely high and beyond the capacity of a lot of municipalities to afford anymore. So we really do have to focus our investments in transit and walking and cycling. So we're not trying to make it, not necessarily trying to make it more difficult to get around by car. We're doing, making changes to make it easier to get around on foot, bike, and transit. We absolutely know that some people continue to get around by car, and will always do that. That's their choice. But at this point, we're sort of beyond the point where we can afford to try to build our way out of congestion. It's just not feasible.
Once again, that was our interview with Mike Anderson, the manager of transportation for the city of New Westminster, where he discussed where the city's recently received $3.96 million from TransLink would be going towards in order to improve transportation infrastructure within New Westminster. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. All right. We are back. This is Danny Nesvedarani once again, but live, hosting Speak Up for all of you. And again, that was my interview piece with Mike Anderson, the manager of transportation for the City of New Westminster, discussing a sum of money they receive from TransLink and what that money would be going towards in terms of transportation. Hope you learned a little bit. If you are from New Westminster, would love to hear your thoughts on these improvements and what they mean to you. And if you have just any opinions or anything you want to talk about in terms of the pieces or even songs that we play this hour, you can text us at 778-782-2573. That is 778-782-2573. Now we're going to be moving away from BC in this next segment. This is a piece from Winnipeg, from U-Radio, and it was produced by Ryan Funk, who's a super talented journalist from that area. And this is a piece that I wanted to play because I think it is something that is not just Winnipeg specific, but is, you know, quite Canada-wide and just globally pretty relevant, I would say. And in the title of the piece is "Poor Air Quality Sparks Health Discussions at Downtown Wellness Event." And sort of a piece that delves into the complications of health and wellness when in the midst of dealing with wildfire smoke. It's pretty widely known and widely accepted that wildfire smoke and smoke of any sort is just not amazing for humans and human lungs. And yet, people still need ways to exercise, to breathe comfortably, and to promote wellness in a way that is safe and accessible for all. And that becomes a lot more difficult when you take into account the fact that wildfire and the smoke that it produces, and the smoke that they produce are just becoming more and more common every summer, it seems. So here is that piece from Ryan Funk right here.
This community update was brought to you by U-Radio. Despite the faint haze of wildfire smoke in downtown Winnipeg, dozens gathered Saturday morning for group yoga. However, for the third annual Health and Wellness Day, hosted by the Peg City Steppers, the occasion wasn't a sure thing. Shauna Goodridge, a founding member, said they had to scramble to find indoor solutions due to the possibility that poor air quality could put people at risk.
This year, I think it really brought it home for us, because the past 2 years, we were fortunate with lovely weather. So we did not think about plan B, what to do in case of. But this year, when we saw the smoke and, you know, all of the things, we're like, we need to come up with a risk management plan so that we can think about smoke, rain, like the different things that could happen and how we would treat for it. So we have started to plan that out.
Despite potentially losing some of the ambiance of being outdoors in downtown, Goodridge said they now have an indoor plan and will be proactive instead of reactive in the future. The Health and Wellness Day has two objectives: to bring vibrancy back into the city's downtown area and to build a community for people to participate in physical activity and engage in discussions on wellness.
This year, we have incorporated something new as a part of our Health and Wellness Day. We have added what we call mini wellness talks.
One of those discussions was smoke and respiratory conditions. Goodridge, being asthmatic herself, says she can relate to the challenges and risks going outside this summer has brought.
You know, it's really tough, like coming out of the cold winter months when you have to bundle up and be more indoors. So you're looking forward to be outdoors in the summer months, and then to confront with the smoke, it can be challenging.
Peg City Steppers hold weekly runs throughout the year. For Shannon Walcott, it was a fantastic community to build relationships, and as a newcomer, the perfect place to get to know Winnipeg. However, she says she has been forced inside this year by the smoke, away from an activity and community she has become so fond of.
I have an ongoing congestion problem. Like, my allergies are absolutely terrible, and I've been working on it for probably 6 months, 7 months now. So I've gone to an ENT and stuff. So it was getting better. But I realized, like, since June and July, I'm back to my congested state again. So I am outside a lot less, really and truly. It's kind of sad because I really wanted to be outside more this summer. I was like, yay, summer, we need to get outside.
For Goodridge, Walcott, and many others with respiratory conditions, air quality can become another barrier to getting physically active. Not only can it make outdoor activity more difficult, as explained by nurses Andrea Herbert-Lugston and Joyce Plante, but it can also put the rest of your health at risk.
If you do have these issues, it will affect the expansion of your lungs. Like, your lungs can be very tight and it's not be able to filter or to absorb this fresh air if it's all contaminated with the smoke. So your lungs will be struggling, having some challenge in expanding and then taking in that air. So then that will eventually affect their ability to move around or daily activities that they're supposed to be doing.
Herbert Lungston added,
if you have to go out, just be cautious before you go out. Check the weather, check the air quality. Ask yourself, what are you going out for? Are you going to do something strenuous? Can it be done another day? Do you have to just go get groceries? So you have to decide whether it's okay for you to go out or not.
Both Plante and Herbert Lungston recommended that if you're going outside, wearing a mask can go a long way. Although it can be frustrating being stuck indoors on the worst of days, there's still plenty of options to stay active. Goodridge and Walcott both keep a careful eye on forecasts and air quality. And on those poor days, use a treadmill instead of walking outside.
On the days when I cannot go outside, my apartment has a little workout room. I'll probably go on the treadmill and walk for 30 minutes. Not the same, but I still try to get my movement in, my steps in. So I have been using that to substitute for my lack of outsideness.
As for the Health and Wellness Day, Goodridge is excited about what the Peg City Steppers community has built, starting with a small group of friends who have kept each other motivated and accountable and has evolved into a downtown community event.
It's mind-blowing because when we started, we didn't envision this. We just saw it as us staying active. You know, it's cold, we don't want to be indoors, but now it's more of a community, a movement, and we want to continuously give back to our community by offering different opportunities like this.
Goodridge extended an open invitation to anyone looking to start their wellness journey to meet the Peg City Steppers every Saturday at 7:30 a.m. at the Forks Market. With You Multicultural and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ryan Funk.
Thank you to Ryan Funk for that piece coming out of Winnipeg from U Radio. Yeah, really just showing not just, you know, the issues that come from wildfire smoke and contending with that while also wanting to be physically active, but people's resilience in the face of that as well. So really great piece. And I thought I would take another break for music, but this one is from the Winnipeg Jazz Orchestra. It's called The Great Return. Hope you enjoy.
Thank you.
once again, that was The Great Return by the Winnipeg Jazz Orchestra. You know, I love jazz songs that sound like they're about to finish, but then that happens like three other times. And I don't mean that in any sort of bad way. I genuinely do love that. So that was a very lovely track. And the next thing we have for this hour is actually an interview that I did just yesterday. And the full piece for it is not completed. But to give some context, North Van Arts, which is an art organization in North Vancouver, recently came out with this thing called the North Shore Culture Quest. Yeah, the North Shore Culture Quest. And it builds on a interactive map that they had made in 2020 that sort of listed a bunch of important cultural and nature and just hotspots within the North Shore for people to go visit. And it sort of gamifies that process of going outside and discovering parts of the North Shore. And I just thought it was really, really fascinating. And I wanted to learn more about it. And I wanted to go on a quest. So the full piece will include this questing part. But before that, I was actually able to speak with Anna Lynch, one of the directors at North Van Arts. And we spoke a bit about just what sparked the app's creation, what the reception has been like, and how it's sort of considered internally as a cultural Pokemon Go. So do with that what you will. Here is my interview with Anna Lynch in the very lively and loud shipyards of North Vancouver.
Hi, my name is Anna Lynch, and I'm the executive director for North Van Arts.
And can you give a bit of background on the, not just the North Shore Culture Quest app, but the North Shore Culture Map in general?
Yeah, so back in 2020, the North Shore Culture Compass, which is a website with an interactive map, was first published. It was a project that had been in the works for a long time beforehand. And basically the map lists cultural points of interest for all of the North Shore, so that's West Vancouver and North Vancouver. And the reason behind creating it is multiple reasons, but one of them is to support having archival collections and research around different cultural hubs and points of significance, like public art and heritage trails. But it can also be used to plan trips, find new events and places to go, and discover new cultural organizations or pieces of art. So really the website itself is twofold. When the website was launched, one of the ways to promote it, because it came out during the COVID-19 pandemic, was to create treasure hunts. And the treasure hunts were originally PDF scavenger hunts created to get people to explore different areas that were listed on the Culture Compass. Since then, we've decided to develop the Treasure Hunts into its own app, which is our new North Shore Culture Quest app, which gamifies finding different locations and clues so that you can learn a little bit more about the cultural history and heritage of the North Shore and find some hidden gems along the way.
What has the uptake sort of been like? You know, when I think of apps that sort of gamify the act of exploring, looking around, I think of things that got really popular quite a few years ago, like Pokemon Go and things like that. Are you seeing, I guess, similar interaction with this sort of thing?
Yeah, I think so. We've only been launched officially for a month. We had a really big uptake in the beginning. Internally, we've already been referring it to as a cultural Pokemon Go. Yeah, so it's the same kind of idea, and we're definitely getting quite a lot of downloads, not just from local residents, but from people all across Metro Vancouver who are, you know, coming across to the North Shore for the day and looking for something a little bit different to do. The plan is that we're going to release different quests each month in different locations. So we have neighborhoods listed across the North Shore to help keep it fresh and relevant and give people something to come back to each month. Some of those will be sponsored, so there'll be some prizes along the way too. Hopefully that way people don't just use it just on one-off chance, but get to use it daily to get out and about.
You said there's a quest happening here today at the shipyards. Can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, so one of the first quests that we launched last month is called Around the Shipyards, and all the clues, there's 6 clues in and around the shipyards area, so it's great for those who are just coming across on the sea bus or getting down here by one of the local buses. And that one is going to be permanently on the app, so it can be played at any time. It takes about maximum of 30 minutes to complete, with all the clues being within about 5 minutes walk of each other. And it features lots of different types of clues. So there's letter-based clues, multiple choice, and then my personal favorite are photo clues, where you have to line up a historical photo of the North Shore, in this case the shipyards, with the same location in current day. It's a very cool little insight in how it used to look here not that long ago.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
All right, we are back again with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. We have about 24 minutes or so left in this hour, but I want to thank you all so much for tuning in to this hour of talk radio. And yeah, once again, that was my interview with Anna Lynch on the North Shore Culture Quest. And that was a really cool interview for me to do. The full edited version of it that includes us going on the Culture Quest will be up hopefully Thursday. Hopefully Jesse will be able to play that on his Speak Up. So stay tuned for that, because Speak Up plays Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 10 a.m. But it was a really cool piece for me to do because, you know, the North Shore, North Vancouver specifically, is actually where I was born and raised. So any chance I get to, you know, produce news that has to do with that area, I get really excited about, you know. I have my qualms with the North Shore, but when it comes to places to explore and just the amount of nature and active spaces within that area, it is really quite amazing. You know, I can just name so many off the top of my head, whether that's Deep Cove or Lynn Canyon or Lonsdale Key or Edgemont or Grouse. You know, there's just a lot of places to explore. So to sort of have this new app that kind of prioritizes that and encourages people to not just get active and walk around during the summer, but to explore so many of these areas that I grew up honestly taking for granted in a lot of ways, I think it's a really, really cool project. So I was really happy I got to do that. And I hope that you learned something from that too. If you want to explore the North Shore, download the North Shore Culture Quest. It's up on the App Store. Regardless of what App Store you use, it will be there and ready for you to use to explore the beautiful North Shore. This is not an ad. This is just me saying to get out this summer if you're able to, you know? Anyways, coming up next, I'm going to be playing another piece that I produced last week. This one on the Burnaby Pride flag raising event that had happened on early last week. And it was sort of marking a week-long celebration of Pride within the city of Burnaby, which takes place a bit before the major Pride events within the city of Vancouver. They had their Pride Festival on Saturday. I heard that was amazing. So here is that piece for all of you. I think the reason I want to play it is because, not just because it's a piece about, you know, something that is, should be celebrated and talked about, but because of the voices and the specific perspectives that are shared within this piece, I think are worth repeating. So here's that for all of you. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On July 21st, local 2S LGBTQIA+ advocacy group Burnaby Pride, along with the City of Burnaby, held an event outside of Burnaby City Hall where the Intersex Progress Pride flag was raised next to the British Columbia and Canada flags. The flag raising marks a week of celebration taking place 1 week before Burnaby's annual Pride Festival on July 26th. First to speak at the event was Burnaby City Councilor Daniel Tatro, who emphasized the city's support of Burnaby's queer community, as well as its stance against anti-2S LGBTQIA+ discrimination.
And also, just by being here today, you're showing your support. You're doing your part. And also, we're here to remember that Pride is also joyous and a vibrant celebration. And a reminder that we must continue to push back against bigotry, hatred, and discrimination. And again, not just today, but every day. In our community, our differences don't divide us. They are what make us special. And I'm honored to be here, I'm honored to show my support, and I'm thrilled to see you here as well.
This sentiment was echoed by other speakers at the event, including Aza Rojbi, a coordinator for Burnaby Pride.
One of the important things we have to continue talking about is Pride started as a protest, and it is continues to be a protest. We don't have to look very far to see our rights being challenged and taken away from us, whether that is in provinces nearby here in Canada or across the border in the United States or around the world. So we have to continue, as the speaker before me, the councillor said, fighting against bigotry, challenging bigotry. And it's important for people that live in Burnaby to see that reflected in their elected officials and here at City Hall.
Lastly, Vishal Deeplaw, the Senior Manager for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion for the City of Burnaby, spoke on his personal experiences and how that led him to the City of Burnaby.
I've always looked to try and find that sense of belonging and where I felt I genuinely should be. Through my teens, growing up in South Africa, I was the obese kid, I was the kid of color, I was also the gay kid. And for the time that I grew up, it was not the best place to be. It has its challenges. Then when I wanted to marry my husband 22 years ago, we were told we could not get married because it was not legal. We then struggled to have a son, which we had to wait as well for laws to change for us to actually become parents. When we became parents, we had to fight with the idea of, firstly, not getting parental leave because there's no maternal figure. At the same time, we had to fight for the fact that some schools didn't want our son in their schooling system. Later on, we immigrated for a better life for my son, which is 8 years ago. And if anybody else here are immigrants, you know, you're then also trying to fit in once again. You're trying to find your footing, you're trying to see where you belong. But I want to share that in 2022, I joined the City of Burnaby. Today, I can share that have found my sense of belonging. From our mayor, council, our city leadership, colleagues, from across all departments who I can also call friends, I feel seen.
At the end of the event, the Intersex Progress Pride flag was raised. Beginning this year's celebration of Pride in the City of Burnaby. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby.
curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something everyday, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday. You heard that right, Monday, from 3 to 4 p.m. Your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
And we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is Danny Nazvatarani, your host for the hour. And coming up, we have a piece out of Nanaimo from none other than Lauren McKenzie of CHLY. And this has to do with some longtime construction that has finally been completed within the commercial street of Nanaimo. I know, so, so exciting. And when I say that, there is not a hint of humor in my voice, because I really do mean that. I think pieces like this that explain the processes behind construction and I guess the celebration around it being finished are really important, and I think do a lot to explain to people, including myself, all that go into it. So without further ado, Lauren McKenzie from CHLY with her piece on Nanaimo's Commercial Street.
This is a CHLY News update. Commercial Street has unveiled a new look as the first phase of the downtown street upgrades come to a close. Phase 1 of the construction started in September of 2024, with parts of Commercial Street blocked off. Street-side parking was temporarily reduced while businesses were still accessible via the sidewalks. The first of five phases, the construction spanned from Wharf Street to Church Street, on upgrading the subsurface and streetscape of Commercial. This phase was scheduled to be completed by the end of May or early June of this year, but after some significant setbacks, including the discovery of a mine shaft underneath the Bastion and Commercial Street intersection, the timeline was pushed back. Now, on Thursday, July 24th, the City of Nanaimo is finally reopening the majority of the street, announcing the near completion of the first phase of the project. Downtown business owners, city staff, members of the Nanaimo City Council, and the local MLA all came together to drop the ballards, officially reopening the street for vehicle traffic.
From 3, 2, 1, ready? 3, 2, 1. There you go.
Mayor of Nanaimo Leonard Krogh told the crowd that this project's objective is to reestablish downtown as a destination and enhance the public space along the street for the public and retailers.
This is still a good place to be, a safe place to live, and a wonderful city that has its eye in the future with its respect for the past reflected in all that we do to preserve the history of this community, but reflected in the positive impact of all the investments that we as council and the City of Nanaimo are making on your behalves to make this and continue it to be the most wonderful downtown in British Columbia.
While some final touches still need to be completed on the surface area of the street, the new upgrades include new flush curbs, widened sidewalks, greenery, lighting elements, and upgraded underground infrastructure that was at the end of its life. Public artwork was also added to the area, including a new rainbow square featuring the rainbow and the colors of the Progressive Pride flag at the Commercial Street and Bastion Street intersection. Stephen Johns, with the Downtown Business Association and the owner of Red Shelf Decor, also spoke to the crowd, saying that the last 11 months of construction have been hard for downtown businesses.
But we're near the end of the marathon, and I have ran a lot of marathons, and those last 500 meters are the hardest, and that's what we're running right now. Today is the finish line, and I think we have to remember that we're all human and everyone has done the best they can.
After the speeches, CHLY spoke with Johns about the end of the construction, which he says is a long time coming.
I think the most exciting part is that we can just see the finish line and that businesses can get back to normal. Many businesses have thrived through this last year, and many have just survived. But I think the key is now we can put the negativity, the construction, the blue gates all behind us, and we can move on and we can embrace. We've got a summer that is one of the most beautiful summers we've ever had in West Canada.
As a business owner of one of the stores right in the middle of the construction, John says business can have ups and downs at any time, and the construction did add to hardships, but many stores came together to support each other during the time.
I think one thing I love about Nanaimo and I love about downtown is we've all stuck together. We haven't always agreed. There's been moments where some business owners, myself, we've disagreed, but we've been in it together. It's really felt great to be able to have open conversations with other businesses. There has been some negativity from outside people and outside sources, and you get that. You always get a little bit of that. And I think today there's no time and there's no space for negative energy. This is just such a beautiful day, and it just looks so beautiful. So
he says the city of Nanaimo has been very supportive of the businesses downtown during the construction. John says he hopes these new upgrades will wow people who haven't been downtown in a while and will encourage more people to explore the neighborhood.
I'm going to say it's been a ride, but I'm so excited. I'm excited for tonight for the night market. I'm excited for tomorrow and the next day. It's only going to get better and better.
CHY also spoke with James Knight, Capital Project Management Specialist with the City of Nanaimo and Project Manager for the Design Commercial Street Project. He says it's an exciting day for the first phase of the construction to come to a close.
Very excited. I have always been a strong supporter of the project, which helps a lot when you're working on a project. So, you know, the goals of the project are very close to my heart. So I'm really, really excited. Really excited for the business owners that are down here that have been, you know, kind of weathering the inconveniences, to say the least, of construction. So I'm really happy to see them getting their street back and getting people back downtown. And I'm excited that we're nearly finished, and I think it looks fantastic. And
he says this construction has been a bit of a challenge, having to work with older infrastructure, which pushed back the end date of the project.
It's really hard to know what to expect when you're working in a road that's over 150 years old. I think this is one of the first streets that was built in Nanaimo. And so there are a lot of things that were not documented, so which we kind of expected, but we didn't really expect the extent that we found. And so, you know, we just had to work through things as they came up, and it was challenging, and it did extend our timelines, but they're dealt with now, and we don't have to worry about them in the near future anyway.
In his position, it was Knight's job to work and communicate with the downtown businesses. He says for the most part, the owners have been very supportive of the project.
Obviously, you know, with something like this, it doesn't always go as smoothly as it should. But I think overall, all the businesses have been very patient, very supportive, very respectful. And, you know, we've worked through it together. So
phase two of the project is scheduled to start in 2027, following the construction of the downtown transit exchange. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Thank you again to CHLY and Laura McKenzie for that piece on the completed construction on Nanaimo's Commercial Street. It's a lovely place. If you haven't checked out the night market, you should this summer. It's I was able to go on its first night of this year because of the NCRA that was happening in Nanaimo. So it was a great time, and yeah, go check it out if you're able to. Anyways, coming up next, we've got another song from another group that has been steadily topping the charts of this radio station, CJSF, and that is none other than Empanadas Ilegales. I'm going to play a song from them by the name of Matador. Once again, that was Matador by Empanadas Ilegales. Thank you all so much for tuning in to this hour of Speak Up. This has been Danny Nesvedarani. And coming up next, we've got, as always, Democracy Now!
Hey.